Welcome to The Thread, a podcast that explores the ideas and innovations shaping a stronger, smarter energy future. This show is brought to you by Mosaic. Many pieces, one purpose. Welcome to episode 2 of The Thread. Today, we are so excited to be joined by Kyle Comstock, Senior Vice President of Grid Modernization here at Mosaic. Kyle brings with him over a decade of experience at NV Energy and 6 years at Mosaic. During this time, he's led projects within smart grid deployment, renewable energy integration, resiliency, and advanced utility operations technology. At Mosaic, he oversees strategic advisory, technology roadmaps, and data governance. Kyle, welcome to the show. We're really excited to have you here today, and we're excited to hear your perspective on what it takes to build a future-ready, resilient grid.
Yeah, hi Liz, thanks for having me on today. Super excited for our conversation.
All right, Kyle. North American utilities, they're under a lot of pressure to modernize their grid right now. From your vantage point, what are the top 3 drivers that are fueling new ADMS investments today? And how should utilities shape their roadmaps to stay ahead of those trends?
Yeah, Liz, that's a great question. There is a lot of ADMS projects going on right now in our industry. And through working with, a number of utilities on those projects, a lot of the drivers come around visibility. Utilities are looking to gain better visibility over their grid, assets on the grid, whether they are, utility-owned assets or customer-owned assets. That visibility will help them provide better reliability, right? Understand how to better operationalize some of the new technologies around distributed energy resources and those sorts of things. So that visibility, I think, is probably the key driver behind it. I think there's some additional drivers that come off that visibility around improving customer satisfaction, right? The ADMS system gives you the visibility to better understand where outages are, where your crews are, how to dispatch them more efficiently to improve outage response time and improve customer satisfaction. There's additional benefits, again, around, integrating distributed energy resources, knowing where they're at on your grid, how you can utilize them to create more efficient operations, potentially utilize those to offset, some capital investments to upgrade the grid. And then there's a lot of work, tying the ADMS system right now to some fire mitigation tools, at least out in it used to just be the western part of North America, but it seems to be going further and further east, where natural disasters and wildfires are really becoming a challenge for utilities. So having a way to kind of stitch together some of the fire data that they're getting to their distribution system, to the customers that are impacted, so that utilities can make good operational decisions to mitigate the fire risk, but also be able to communicate to their customers that a public safety power shutoff is coming and here's the time frame and those sorts of things. So I know you asked for 3. I really think it's that visibility and there's some underlying aspects that visibility allows them to kind of capitalize on that are really driving a lot of these ADMS investments.
So once those technology roadmaps are in place, data correction and governance then becomes pretty foundational. How do you prioritize cleanup efforts and how do those priorities align with your strategic advisory and technology roadmap recommendations?
Yeah, it's a discussion we have often. The technologies are great, right? ADMS, some of the new OMS functionalities, and I've mentioned some of the fire mitigation tools, and there's, distributed energy resource management systems. All of these tools are fantastic, but in order to realize all the benefits, to meet the business goals and needs and really get a return on that investment, the underlying data has to be really, really good. Utilities have historically operated from a connectivity model perspective to know, what assets in their system are connected to each other and how they're connected to their customers. But to utilize kind of all these advanced features, you know, you need more data and you need really, really solid data. So typically when we get engaged, you know, and start working with our clients, we like to do an as-is analysis to say, okay, well where's your data at today? You know, and keeping kind of the operational folks in mind who are going to use these tools, we never want to give them something that's worse than they're operating with today. So one of the big, you know, kind of priorities for data cleanup as we're looking at deploying a new system is, you know, we need the data to be at least as good as it is today in the new system so that the operators and the field personnel and the engineers who are using the system aren't taking a step backwards. And that's really important for the user adoption and to make sure that the teams are excited to use the tools and understand how to use them to perform their jobs better and to really serve their customers better. And then kind of once we prioritize that, we like to look back or take a step back and say, okay, well, in your technology roadmap, you know, what are the additional things that you're trying to do as a business? Are we looking at fire mitigation? Are we looking at, you know, FLISR or VVO? Are we looking at DERMS? And what are the data requirements for those different modules or applications that you're looking to deploy? And really start to work backwards from there. And that's, you know, part of the project phase of it, right? And making sure that the data is good to get to go live and to get these systems deployed and in service. But that's not good enough, right? Because we can spend all of this time and money and energy really cleaning up the data and getting it to a good spot for that go live event. But if we don't have good data governance and good processes and procedures in place to maintain that, you know, then we see this slip over time where the utilities aren't able to continue to utilize the tools that they've deployed because their data model, you know, starts to fall off. And that can happen in many ways. You know, often we look at how is new construction being handled and how are construction drawings being marked up and converted to in-service and GIS and the ADMS tools, and what are those timeframes? Because we need to continue to drive good data into these systems day over day, week over week, year over year to ensure that, you know, utilities can continue to get the return on that investment that they're looking for, and they can continue to serve their customers in the best way possible.
Let's talk about reliability. It comes up again and again when we talk about grid modernization. Modernizing the grid without compromising stability, it's kind of a constant balancing act, right? So in your opinion, how can robust network model design and validation help utilities integrate things like DERS or EVs or clean energy assets while maintaining that system integrity?
Yeah, you know, it really goes back to there's a lot of really great technologies out there. You know, there's all of these systems that are helping folks in the control room process data faster and make decisions more quickly and, you know, allowing assets on the grid to operate in a more automated fashion to isolate faults and restore customers and, you know, call on resources that are deployed down the line and all of those sorts of things. But again, these systems are only as good as the data that's going into them. You know, there's thoughts, you know, in the project phase around, well, we need to hit the milestone and we need to get, you know, this application live and get it in service to be used and useful and those types of things. But spending the time up front to really look at the underlying data. And, you know, if we're talking ADMS, that a lot of times revolves around the network model. And so really through that project phase and even pre-project phase, you know, we often call it like phase zero work to do an analysis of your data model and your network model to understand what you have. And it's not just your GIS model, right? When we're talking about these network models inside of ADMS, we're talking, yes, the GIS data that comes in, but oftentimes it includes data coming from SAP or Maximo, from protection databases like Aspen, or other databases that have been created at the utility, you know, to capture specific data, whether it's distributed energy resource ratings, right? And those sorts of things and integrating with, you know, the customer information system. It's very important to spend the time stitching all of those data sources together into your network model design ahead of time And then really spending the time to validate that your network model is accurate and gives you good results. And there's a whole thought around that, right? That, you know, it's really good to design your network model. But then once you do that and you have a model deployed in an environment, to start to look at your model and tune your model and test it, right? To make sure that as you're seeing faults on your system, that they're predicting to the spots you expect them to. Again, so that the applications you're deploying can provide your operators, your end users, your field personnel with accurate results so that they can drive those operational efficiencies and operate in a more safe manner as well.
I want to dive deeper into the model itself, since it really is, you know, the backbone of the ADMS. Would you be able to walk us through Mosaic's approach to, you know, first defining the test scope, then choosing between automated and manual checks, and then ensuring coverage across voltage levels and topologies?
Yeah, it's very critical, right, through the ADMS project phase to do, you know, a very robust and methodical testing of your network model. You know, testing doesn't just start at testing. It really starts at requirements. And that's where we like to start, you know, looking at what are the business requirements, what are the, you know, functional and non-functional requirements of the system we're deploying. How are we going to meet the needs of the business through this project and work from there to develop some really strong test cases that align with those requirements? You know, we take those test cases and we test them in, you know, various testing phases throughout the project and really to make sure that, you know, the model itself is going to meet the needs of the application to meet those business requirements. And we talk about, you know, automated testing versus manual testing. There's a lot of really useful, you know, automated testing methodologies out there, you know, especially when we're looking at, you know, pure assets, right, and trying to make sure that we have the correct assets from, you know, our line segment perspective and transformers and all of those assets that there are no, I'll say, funky things that happen, right, where you have a distribution line that changes conductor sizing for three line segments. You know, we can identify those through some automated checks, but then also a lot of manual checking, you know, making sure that as we're writing switching orders in the system or we're doing, you know, distribution power flow, that we're getting the results that we want. And part of that, you know, manual checking is really looking at, you know, the next phase of the model development, which is that tuning portion. You know, really making sure that we're tuning the model to support these applications and we're getting the results that we want. Again, so that when we deploy this out to the end users in a production environment, that we feel good about what information, right, is going to be provided to the end users so that they can make good operational decisions to continue to serve the customers in the best way possible.
Kyle, what best practices do you recommend following to keep regression test libraries as current as possible? I'm thinking about this influx of new assets coming online. I'm thinking about protection schemes shifting. You know, our grid is evolving. So how are we keeping up with all of those changes? And how are we evolving our testing strategies?
This is a challenge, you know, and I'll talk about it kind of in two stages, one in the project phase. And anyone who's been through an ADMS project knows that there are defects, there are bugs that have to be fixed, right? And it doesn't matter what vendor you choose. That's just part of the project lifecycle, right? As we start to look at, you know, how we're going to tailor these applications to fit, you know, the specific utility needs, and we start to look at customizations and different configurations, there are, you know, patches and hot fixes that are going to occur. It is very critical, right, that as we start to deploy those, that we are doing regression testing to go back and retest many of the things that were already proven to have worked, just to ensure that, you know, through the bug fix stage, we're not causing any additional challenges on the system. And so we typically do that by just running through the same test cases, right, that we have already gone through You know, if it's in an SAT kind of testing phase, then whatever we get back from a, you know, defect resolution, right, we'll start to go back and retest all those test cases that apply to make sure that we didn't cause any additional challenges. Now, when we're talking about, you know, post go live and we're in a production environment, you know, it's critical to make sure that we have a good testing environment, one that matches the production environment, you know, same configuration, all of those types of things, so that we are testing, you know, as close to like for like as we can with the production environment. But you brought up a good point, Liz. You know, there's not just the software application itself, right? There are additional protection schemes that go out. There are additional, you know, smart assets that are being deployed. And, you know, it's important for the technology teams, IT, OT teams to work very closely with operations engineering and control room operations to understand what these new devices are that are being deployed in the field, or protection schemes, so that together they can work to define what are some good testing parameters or test cases that we can utilize to ensure that the application is still going to function as expected, you know, with these new devices in the field, whether they're, you know, an IntelliTeam switch out there or a set of switches. And that's really important. You know, one of the things we often see, and I've seen it, you know, my whole career in the utility space is the silos, right? Plenty of silos at utilities, and really working to break those down to make sure that we're getting all the correct parties engaged as we start to look at how we're going to test some of these new technologies as they're being deployed out on the system.
All right. So let's say you've got your system, it's gone live. Inevitably, we're going to start to see some unexpected edge cases emerge. So that being said, what are some ongoing support activities like, you know, model refreshes, anomaly hunts, run state health checks? What do you recommend to keep a utility's ADMS performing at that peak reliability?
You know, we always do our best. And when I say we, I mean, you know, everyone involved in the project, right? On any project, to account for all of the knowns, right? How are we going to utilize the tool in this scenario and that scenario? And that's a really important part of, you know, defining your requirements and coming up with use cases and user stories to, you know, really tie the end users to those use cases and understand how they're going to operate inside of the application and what impacts it's going to have on other roles at the utility. But we can't think of all of them. You know, we're going to miss some, or there's going to be that, you know, corner case or edge case, call it what you want, that just was not accounted for because maybe it had never happened. I think this is where, you know, having broken down silos is very beneficial because the teams often come to the best solutions on how to solve those edge cases when we're working cross-functionally. When we have folks who really understand the application itself and the capabilities of it, working with folks who understand the purely operational side of it, right? From a grid perspective or a field perspective, and those folks can come together to create a nice solution for those edge cases. You know, and on top of that, right, it's, you mentioned kind of how do we keep it running at peak performance, right, or peak reliability. And that really goes back to, one, having good governance structures in place from a data perspective. Because again, if the data starts to drop off and you're not maintaining network model data, then the performance of the system is going to degrade over time. But there's other things as well, you know, making sure that your infrastructure from a hardware perspective is running well, and, you know, you're testing your backup facilities and all of those sorts of things. And I always go back to, you know, I think culture and organization can fix a lot of those things, because if the teams are working closely together and communicating on a regular basis, they can often, you know, find some of those challenges when they're small and relatively easy to fix before they become very large and difficult challenges that typically, you know, surface during a storm or a large outage event, which is the worst time to discover those. So keeping that constant communication flow and team approach to maintaining these systems from both an operations perspective and an IT perspective and an OT perspective is really, really critical.
So we've talked about initiatives driving grid modernization in North America. We moved into talking about, you know, the network model and the more foundational pieces of an ADMS, but I want to shift over to outcomes. Regulators and ratepayers, they want to see clear return on investment. So I'm curious, which performance metrics have you found to be the most effective in demonstrating measurable gains in terms of reliability, cost efficiency, or even resilience?
This is a really good question, Liz, and it's something that we have to think about early. And utilities should be thinking about them right before the project even starts, because in order to, you know, get funding for these types of projects, right, we have to go to our regulators and ask them for that funding. And we want to be able to demonstrate that, you know, hey, what we're going to do is going to help our customers, right, whether it's from a cost perspective, a reliability perspective, those sorts of things, you know, and so how are we going to do that? I find that, you know, using ways that are well understood by the regulators, but also by our customers is very important. You know, there are industry benchmarks out there, right? SAIDI, SAIFI, CAIDI, CAIFI, and we can look at those as, you know, measurements that we can track and say, okay, you know, prior to ADMS, we were at X, and, you know, after we deploy ADMS and all the functionality, then we're going to be, you know, 10% better, 20% better. And it's really important to think through those and how the application is actually going to drive us operationally to do better at those things. And this really goes back to data, and this time not network model data, right? But having a good understanding of, you know, what is your average outage response time today? You know, how long are you waiting for customer calls to come in? How accurately can you dispatch a crew to an outage location? And if we're able to capture those data points ahead of time, you know, we can forecast out saying, okay, well, if we have better visibility or improved prediction, right, due to accurate network model tuning and network model development, we can save, you know, 15 minutes of troubleshooter drive time by more accurately predicting the exact location or as close to the exact location as we can of the fault itself. And so there's many of those things that we can tie in. And those aren't just customer outage improvements, right? But there's also cost improvements there because now, you know, our crews are spending less time driving around and more time, you know, doing actual work and then can move on to do other work. So there's some cost savings there as well. But it is important, right, to understand that, you know, by deploying these systems, it is not just deploy the system and all of a sudden we're going to see all these operational benefits, right? There is constant maintenance that needs to occur to allow the utilities to continue to get this value out of the systems that they're deploying. So it's a bit of a catch-22. It's not all, you know, rainbows and sunshine saying, hey, we're going to deploy it and it's just going to make us better. No, we have to continue to maintain it to continue to be better at what we're doing.
So Kyle, you've said it over and over again that technology, that's just one part of the equation. You know, this other piece that remains pretty elusive for a lot of utilities is converging IT and OT. Where do you see the biggest technical challenge or cultural gap when integrating ADMS with GIS, with SCADA, OMS, and AMI? And how do you think that business process redesign or even targeted training could help bridge those divides?
Yeah, it is a challenge. And I'm glad you brought in the cultural aspect of this. You know, when I think back to my time at the utility and we went through some of this, you know, IT, OT convergence to, you know, look at responsibilities, right, of what's handled by the OT teams and what's handled by the IT teams and how do they work together to, you know, maintain the systems that operations are using really to keep the lights on and to serve our customers. There was a big cultural gap, you know, and I continue to see this, right, that, you know, the OT teams are very much tied to operations and they understand the 24/7 nature of operations and that when things happen to the system, the application, right? They need to be resolved quickly because, you know, it slows down or could even stop, right, what we're doing operationally, which is, you know, switching so that we can restore customers or energizing new equipment for our customers, you know, storm response and all of those things. And I think historically the IT side of the house has, you know, handled more of the corporate environment, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, you know, applications that, yes, can really cause some delays or challenges with the business. But the operational applications really, you know, touch our customers and are the ones that are helping us to better serve those customers and communicate with those customers and respond to outages. And so we had a challenge, right, of kind of changing that cultural, you know, understanding of how we needed to operate from a technology perspective to respond to challenges and issues that we have in the systems. And that was, you know, that was tough, but it took work and the teams, you know, came together and solved to make sure that they were able to kind of rise to that occasion and handle it. A lot of it came down to, you know, internally putting together some strong SLAs between the group to understand, you know, what are required response times and those sorts of things when there were problems. From a like a business process, you know, redesign and training perspective, you know, I think it's critical. A lot of these IT teams and kind of folks that have been purely IT, they want to do work inside of the OT space, right? I mean, you look around the industry and everyone's talking about ADMS and DERMS and FLISR. And, you know, if you've worked your career in technology and in IT, like, why wouldn't you want to be a part of this? It's the cool, sexy stuff, right, that's happening in our industry. And so I think they're eager to learn. But I don't think that we as an industry have always done a good job of setting people up for success, right? What I've historically seen is, you know, during these projects, it's like, hey, Bob, I know, you know, you've always done application support. Why don't you just sit next to the vendor, the SI for, you know, 18 months throughout the project, and you're going to learn everything that you need to know to, you know, pick up the football and run with it after go live. I don't think that works as well as we would hope. And I think the utilities and all of us in the industry really need to put some thought into how are we preparing our teams to be successful at continuing to support and not just support, but continuing to drive additional value out of these systems, you know, post go live and run state. And I think the best way to do that is to really develop, you know, some good internal training programs. To have good roles and responsibilities established and have, you know, a curriculum in place that helps our teams, you know, work their way up through these roles, you know, tied to what they're doing inside of these systems. And we have to take the time to do that so that we can build these, you know, technology support teams to a place that they're able to support the applications, you know, that we in the industry, you know, need to run 24/7 to maintain reliability on our systems and provide, you know, the response times and the communication to our customers in a way that our customers are expecting it.
I want to look into the future here for a second, Kyle. You know, looking ahead, as utilities are adopting things like AI-driven analytics, they're adopting distributed intelligence, and they're getting really granular with their DIR monitoring. How do you see the network model testing keeping pace or evolving to keep pace with those increasingly dynamic grid conditions?
I mean, it's going to have to get, you know, more rigorous as time goes on. You know, there's not less data being digested by these systems, right? You know, we're deploying more smart devices out onto the grid. We're asking more of these systems, right? As we deploy sensors and devices, you know, there's more data inputs coming in. And these ADMS systems now are really starting to become central, not just to the core operations of the utility, but to kind of all operations in the utility, you know, customer operations and everything. And so It's going to be critical that as we start to look at, you know, additional data sets, whether it's, you know, DERs, you know, increasing in penetration on the system and how we're bringing that information in and how we're displaying that, it's going to be important to ensure that we continue to have the level of data integrity that we need. I think there's going to be some, you know, and I'm already starting to see, right, some AI tools, like you mentioned, and there's, you know, AI forecasting out there that's happening to help utilities better understand, you know, what will the availability of DERs be over the next, you know, hour, 6 hours, 12 hours, and those sorts of things. And so finding effective ways, not just to have good data for those, you know, AI tools to do that prediction, but how do we take that data and display it in a way to the folks that need to see it, so that they can make good decisions. You know, are we integrating some of those tools into ADMS? Are we, you know, providing it as a separate display? And so I think a lot of thought needs to go into, you know, not just, you know, continued network model testing and tuning our network model, but as additional tools are being deployed, you know, what is the impact on the end user? You know, is it too much data? Are we putting too much in front of them at any given time so that, you know, they're unable to make decisions because they're just continuing to process, right? And maybe that's an area that AI can help, right? To process and provide, you know, some very simple and effective data points for them to make good decisions on.
All right, Kyle, very last question for you. If you could leave utility executives with three actionable pieces of advice as they start to launch or scale their grid modernization programs, what would they be?
Yeah, so number one would be to take a real hard look at your technology roadmap. And really doing this from a, you know, a entire organizational wide scale. You know, we often see at the utilities that we work with, you know, there's multiple initiatives, multiple projects, right? Whether it's an ADMS project happening at the same time as a utility network project, as a CIS project, and all of these things happening. So I think it starts by taking, you know, a good look at everything that's going on and mapping that out to say, okay, what are the actual timeframes of all of these different, you know, large projects that we have going on, and how are they going to interact with each other? And I think that's important to do so that as an organization, right, they can align on resources and on priorities and make sure that they're doing things to set each other up for success, right? Instead of, again, operating in their individual kind of project silos. I think that's a really important step for folks to do today. So that they're setting themselves up for success long term and working to support all of these, you know, parallel projects that are happening. The other thing too, you know, historically utilities have, in my experience, and operated in a space where, you know, they have a lot of great tools, but the governance of those tools for run state isn't fantastic, right? And so we often find that there's not a clear understanding of who's using all the data. You know, who all the end users are, what the needs are for them. And so I think taking a look at, as is today to understand, okay, where are we storing data, right? What are our systems of record today? And who are the users of those systems? You know, do we have folks in a reliability function that are pulling OMS data or data from a different, you know, source to look at, you know, where should we do our next big maintenance programs at and those sorts of things? And making sure that we understand, you know, who all those users are and what their data needs are so that as we look at that roadmap and we understand, you know, what new systems we're deploying, we can ensure that we are, you know, defining what the system of record is for all of these different data sets that are being utilized across, you know, the business and helping those end users get pointed to those and making sure that they're going to continue to be able to, you know, perform their function. And then I think lastly, you know, really ensuring that as utilities start to look at some of these big projects, you know, spending the time up front, right, to define the business requirements, you know, what value are we looking to get out of these applications? And then take that to define what your requirements are, you know, prior to engaging, you know, vendors for vendor selection. I think that's a very important part. I think working with folks who have gone through it before, you know, talking to colleagues in the industry to see what worked for them and what didn't work can save, you know, utilities a lot of headache and pain.
Well, Kyle, thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing your expertise with us.
Yeah, thanks, Liz. This has been a really good chat. I appreciate you having me.
To our listeners, thank you for tuning in. To learn more about Mosaic's work in grid modernization, visit our work at www.themosaiccompany.com. And be sure to catch future episodes of The Thread.